Warning, this podcast discusses addiction, mental health, and other sensitive topics. Please listen with care and take a break if needed. You are not alone, and support is available.
All right, you filthy animals. This is Jay. I'm coming at you with the first of the mini-series episodes. This one will be a little bit of a background into who I am, what I've been through, and how I ended up here doing this podcast with Andrew. Not going to go into hopefully too crazy a detail about anything, but at least give you guys some insight into how I've gained my philosophies and my approach to some of the conversations we have. And that may give you the opportunity to have a little bit more depth and understanding of where I'm coming from and how that may kind of fit into the puzzle piece of your life and whether or not those philosophies are something that resonate with you. Because if they're not, my advice may not be one you want to take. Okay, cool. So first and foremost, I'm going to give you a little bit of the basic shit. Your boy was born in Florida. I'm about 4 or 5 years old, moved down to Florida, spent about 20 years down there, and then moved out to Denver 2 years ago. Growing up, some of the types of areas I grew up around were predominantly a little more conservative, old school, a lot of Little League football, a lot of bars and drinking, okay? Kind of the traditional suburban nonsense. Middle class area, you know, the same routine, near the beach, a lot of boating, a lot of fishing, good old stuff. But in that process, did heavily shape the types of views I grew up with. Part of that was also the religion and influence of the Christian sphere, so to speak, and the input that had into my principles and morals and where I stand today. Largely speaking, I would say that I have a relatively fondness or appreciation for that type of upbringing. I think that these types of kind of grounded, community-based areas can be, are incredibly positively impactful to youth. The problem, though, is that it also comes with its large share of dogma, a lack of insight into some of the things such as therapy, men's mental health, the kind of changing ways of socially integrating oneself, and that it is not the same. As time goes on, you know, we must continue to adapt in how we treat people and how our self-identity is formed and have some or at least a little bit of fluidity in terms of that type of engagement, not being too rigid, you know, with one's self-identity, which is largely not what I grew up with. God love everybody I did, but much of it was a little bit, like I said earlier, dogmatic. So I wanted to get into a little bit of the background traumas that kind of shaped my experience with addiction and substance abuse and misuse. When I was 12, I've talked about this a little bit, my father committed suicide. That has drastically shaped my worldviews and, again, self-identity. My father was a good dude, loved him, football coach, and this may be a little bit of a heavy topic, but we're going to get into it here. The truth is, I've seen his video. He left about a 45-minute video when he passed, and much of his, the things that undermined his ability to view the world were his kind of, what we would consider like a, what I would consider a social death. I had it explained to me fantastically by this cancer doctor in Florida. Shout out Rich. Lord knows what happened to you. But one of the things he said is that everybody functions in society as cells in the body do. That there are constantly these small cells, right? These malignant, I forget the term, free radicals, I believe, is the term for electrons and particles that can negatively impact. Every single moving piece is an individual. And these free radicals are constantly being wiped out by the antioxidants in the body. And it only takes a couple to start a cancerous growth. And I think that for many people who aren't accommodated for by the immune system, so to speak, right, if we're talking this hypothetical, it is very easy to become isolated, become this cancerous thing, and then at times just become a die-off of that, right, to be absorbed back and kind of be washed away. And I think largely that's what happened to my father. As he stopped kind of integrating himself into society and seeing himself as one moving piece of this giant system, I think there was a little bit of detachment there. Now, I don't know exactly for sure what his diagnoses were with in terms of his like psychological state, but I do know he was on medication for things like bipolar, depression, and ADHD. He did speak on the idea of having like multiple voices in the head, of not necessarily hallucinogenic type of voices, but rather just that there was constantly arguments going on in his head. Now, I didn't know all of this until just this past year, until I was 25 years old. It was at 25 that I finally realized that much of the things I've struggled with are things that my father did as well. Now, luckily, because of the people I was around, the types of morals I grew up with, having a strong family sense, and, like I said, friends that pushed me to be a better version of myself, I was able to avoid the path of an early exit, which for a long time was my intention. My last plan, planning out in terms of actually having the details, the dates, and knowing what I thought I was going to do, was for suicide was when I was about 17 years old. That is when I got into my first relationship. I found a really good young woman, wherever she is, hope she's doing fantastic now. She treated me very well, taught me a lot about self-love, gave me something to kind of fight for. And even throughout that, the process of that relationship, my plan was still, when I left high school and got away from family, that I would do it. I just didn't want to do it while I was living with my mom. Got a little older, went off to college, planned about 21, then eventually it was 25. And then I, at some point, made an agreement to myself that I would continue to push back that date every time I thought about it. That if I was using it as nothing more than an exit, that I wasn't really trying hard enough to be here. So for every time I thought about shooting myself or whatever it may be, I pushed it back a year. And so eventually, within, you know, the pattern of about 6 months, the day I was allowed to shoot myself was when I was 125 years old. So it became so far out there that it was no longer worth thinking about. And I was able to start making some progress in my life. Now, despite the fact that I was able to, quote unquote, stick around, right, I haven't necessarily lost all of the other negative aspects that come with feeling stuck in the position I'm in. That was a big reason why, when I was younger, about as soon as I was able to get my hands on alcohol, I went straight to extremely heavy drinking and exclusively binge drinking. Now, I want to, in kind of tangent with this, or tandem, sorry, with this, discuss some of my the ways in which I process things mentally. I also heavily resonate with the way my father spoke about having these kind of battles in the head, always being kind of at war with oneself, easily distracted, heavily impulsive, not attempting to self-diagnose here. All pre-scans I've done show a likely over 90% likelihood of having ADHD, which may be heavily influenced. It may not be what it is. These may be trauma responses. But in terms of the neurodivergence and the mental function, these have been issues I've struggled with since I was about 4 or 5 years old. As a kid, I was in trouble quite a bit for fidgeting. I started getting removed from class in elementary school and spent a good portion of my experience in elementary school isolated in a teacher's office due to my inability to sit still and conversate with people. And that was, in many ways, as much as I understand and empathize with those teachers now, it was the first step towards a social death and habituation of isolation in my life. Part of what came with that was the split or compartmentalization of my ability to process emotions. I don't know that this experience is per se unique. I think that this largely affects the vast majority of individuals. But when speaking about things that are directly emotional or trying to feel through something, the mental processing power I have depletes to almost nothing. Trying to speak in therapy is damn near impossible. I spend a lot of the time kind of sitting there quiet. I'm not really able to get words out. And then I step away from it, able to go into an analytical mind, and then I can talk about it for hours. Ramble, ramble, ramble. But the inability to do both has left a lot of things in my life unhealed. And now I'm at a point where I'm trying to work through some of that, get back into therapy, deal with these things that have been put off. But luckily that I was able to get that because of being around the right people and having a mother and friends that push me to do so, which is something I don't think my father had. I think that lack of acknowledgement towards getting away from the compartmentalization factor is what led to the pot overboiling and him finally, you know, taking that step. So again, getting back to the main point of being in tandem here, these types of mental processing things, in addition to this trauma, ended up with me having an extremely addictive personality. When I first started with caffeine, it was immediately to, you know, multiple drinks a day. If I went and got a Monster, I was like, this is good. Started having three or four every single day. Then it eventually became getting into alcohol. And it was, again, directly to binge drinking. Got to college. Started smoking weed on a regular basis. And from the time I was about 18, when I started smoking weed on a consistent basis, I went every day. And then I transitioned to alcohol and then back to weed. That was about a 3.5 year stint with a single digit number of days that I spent sober. There was no day where I didn't heavily crave it if I didn't have it. So for about those 3 to 3.5 years, it was every day as much as I could get, drinking, smoking, whatever I could get my hands on. And much of that in my mind at the time was in an effort to find something that was manageable or allowed my thoughts to become manageable. It felt easier to think about things and to deal with my place in the world as long as I was a little fucked up. And as I've gotten older, now it's made more sense as I've become more aware to the things I was running from at those times that I had kind of lied myself out of. To people who are, by the way, in these similar periods of being heavily into addiction, to being into, escapism, isolationism, running away from things, I cannot recommend enough you find good therapists and people around that are actively part of your support group. It is very difficult. It is a long and arduous process, and it is not easy to stay kind of vigilant in the journey of finding somebody who can support you. The truth is that a lot of the pain that we go through and a lot of the suffering that we have is not in any way redeemable for something better in life. I would love to tell everybody that your struggle is righteous and will be rewarded. It doesn't work that way. Much of the pain and the suffering that I put myself through at a younger age in order to just either feel something so I couldn't think about the other shit, or to feel nothing and numb myself out of it, those things are simply lost days of my life. I can't say that, you know, maybe the first couple were positive, but, you know, or at least had a potentially positive impact if I was able to recognize what I was doing. But now there is a gap of several years in my life where I have no memory. I don't know really what was going on. I don't remember my friends. I don't talk to the people from that time period. And I have heavily struggled, especially in my last, you know, about 6 to 8 months ago, my last recent bout with depression. I've struggled to find meaning and the ability to accept the fact that certain things are just gone. As a result, now my view of addiction and addiction recovery and kind of getting your life back on track, a journey with mental health, most of it functions around these ideas of harm reduction. And the reason for that is because I partially am very envious of the people who are able to get out a little bit enough to experience life, because I didn't. I lost time. I was drunk in a room, in my own room somewhere. And for those individuals, I can't stress to you enough how sorry I am. And I hope that you find something that allows you to live life to some extent, right? Now, that can be a high-risk behavior for certain people. They need to get off entirely, but I was never able to do that. It only worked in steps and then eventually just cutting it cold turkey. But, you know, for those who can't deal with that, you got to find something that allows you to interact with the world in a way that produces some sort of fruits of the labors of the things you're going through, right? Without it, time just dwindles, man. And as a 25-year-old man, I struggle a lot with the fact that there are years gone. There is nothing now that I can look back on and say with pride or enjoyment that I'm glad I went through, and maybe that will come in years to be. But I've now started to work. If you listen to this last episode, we talked about it a little bit. Or actually, I'm sorry, I apologize. This episode that I'm discussing will come out this Saturday. So listen to that when it comes out. But in terms of where I have started to find my alignment with what it means to be a man, this is an idea I've struggled with since my father's death. And I think it largely revolves around one's ability to have a positive impact on the people around them. It is simplistic and common sense as that may seem, as obvious as it comes across. I don't think I ever simplified it enough to be able to digest it in that way. For me, I had always overanalyzed it. It was, well, you got to be, you know, good to the people around you, but you also have to have responsibility, and you have to be willing to endure suffering, and you have to do it in these ways. And I set all these rules that constantly made me feel as though I was failing. This is, again, a heavy theme in the mental loops that I got stuck in during the process of addiction. They're the loops I get stuck in every time I go through a bout of depression or isolationism or depersonalization and feeling fully detached from all things and individuals around me. It is largely influenced by this constant thought pattern of me being inadequate. That battle is one that I can't tell you I know the outcome to yet. I don't know if I'll find the exact sense of fulfillment I'm looking for, or if I will eventually rework my new definition into something that is more attainable. I don't know, but I know that the journey is worthwhile. And so where I've come to now is accepting that at the bare minimum, it means being a positive influence to the people around me. And that is far more attainable than the things I've said in the past. That now my goodness and my conversations and my attempt to help people with their problems is enough, and it is sufficient to my life's purpose, to sticking around and being an active part of the communities I exist within. As like I said, this I discussed on this episode that'll be coming out, there are two factors that I think are incredibly important in terms of acknowledging how this idea of being a good person functions. I'll kind of move away from the topic of it being about manhood, because I think this can affect all people. The process of that has been that now these two factors are: A, I must actively attempt to be doing good at all times and making sure that my outcomes are such, right? So if I just tell everybody what my opinions are, nobody listens. Well, this is inadequate, right? I'm not helping anybody. I'm pushing people further away. That isn't the sign of a good person. That is a cancerous individual. That is what cult leaders do, right? Tell everybody else they know exactly what's going on, refuse to elaborate, and then disappear off into the woods. So it's that forces me to then accommodate for the alternative views that people hold, the different communication styles, love languages, and so on, and adapt not just my views, but the ways in which I attempt to get those across. So that's the first part. It's the actively doing good part. And then there's the other part, which is not doing things that are harmful to the individual and limiting oneself from being able to have those positive impacts. And that is where the idea of me isolating, numbing myself, right, addiction of any capacity are absolutely, in principle, logically unacceptable. That if I do those things, I lose my ability to now be a part of the communities which I love. And I you know, deeply, deeply entrust most of my enjoyment with this life with. These people are where I find so much of my happiness and joy. And without my ability to impact those things positively, I will lose them, as so many people do, and as I have done in the past. So those parts of not doing harm to oneself now are becoming more and more clear to me as long as I make progress away from them. Once again, I found sufficiency. And those ideas, the core concepts of me just simply improving the constitution of my will and my self-discipline a little bit in order to offer just a little bit more to the people I care about. And then also just having a little bit more courage to do good for the people I care about have been very bite-sized, attainable pieces to my life that I have slowly, not fully yet, I'm still struggling here, I'm not going to lie to you, but have slowly started to lead to me making better changes in my life. This is probably the most optimistic I've been in at least my adult life. But, you know, before I may have been more optimistic when I was a young idiot and I thought the world was candies and rainbows. And I told myself, yeah, you know, we'll go to college and then I'll start a company. And I don't know, maybe 27, 28, I'll retire, go buy my yacht. You know, there was that idea. And then the world hit. And this is since that kind of a epoch been the best I felt about the future life has to offer. Because now the path is clear. I wanted to bring a couple quotes that I had read a little bit when I was younger and maybe didn't digest as well. But some of the aspects of Stoicism I think are fantastic. I've talked about that before. If you've listened to our pod, I think that if you are not somebody who has a religious background or affinity towards religion, as I have, and been influenced by the stories of like Christ, I think that kind of the mantras of that individual are very positively impactful to people and the society around which they exist. But if you're not, Stoicism is a fantastic way of having a kind of godless but principled way of being a good person. It doesn't delineate itself from having this idea of what the universe is. It is simply rooted in the principles of goodness and what is successful and what is not successful. So, like I said, if you're an atheistic or agnostic and not really sure how to find your place in the world, can't recommend it enough. Go read a little bit of Epictetus. Go read some Marcus Aurelius, Socrates, Plato, the works. This quote I'm going to read you is from Marcus Aurelius. "Keep this thought handy when you feel a fit of rage coming on. It isn't manly to be enraged. Rather, gentleness and civility are more human and therefore manlier. A real man doesn't give way to anger and discontent, and such a person has strength, courage, and endurance, unlike the angry and complaining. The nearer a man comes to calm mind, the closer he is to strength." Now, I understand that this may come as a little bit of a, probably didn't fit in directly to what I just spoke about, but it does fit in very, very heavily to one of the things that I think also arose in hand with addiction, which is the anger and the internal frustration, and this resentment I had towards feeling like I missed out, feeling like I was led astray, you know, full mental breakdowns when I didn't know how to tie a tie and I didn't know how to fix my flat tire, and these moments in life where I felt cheated, and this thing I was constantly running from, and these feelings of inadequacy and the anger which I responded with. And to be good to others must require one to be good to themselves, because otherwise, you know, you will again slowly pull yourself away from the ability to do that. Pour not your cup unto others, but pour until your own cup until you overfloweth. I think that regardless of whether you're a man or woman, if you're listening to this, these core ideas still apply. It is in finding love for oneself, as I've been slowly attempting to do, and developing who you are for your passions, your interests, your joys, and spreading that with the world, that we find our purpose. In my world, at least as of now, and let my ignorance precede me, because I may be wrong here, I believe that the secret meaning to life is that there isn't one. There is only purpose. There is a thing you're going to do which you're here, and that is hopefully to be good to others. All the other part of meaning, finding something which is worthwhile, that's up to you. Meaning is inherently created by humans. What cows do and deer do and how a tree grows, there's no meaning. There's only a purpose to that. We attribute meaning to it based on how we interpret it. And so removing yourself from some of that and simplifying it down to simply what works, what doesn't work, and what's good for others and what's good for yourself is a much easier approach to the digestibility of life. I'm sure there are some people that are doing fantastic and their life is great. And now they've started to approach these higher concepts of, you know, really negotiating the fine-tuned details of why their life is important to them and what's important to them about it and da-da-da-da-da. But this podcast isn't really focused on that. Here we're focused on trying to talk to the people who are a little bit broken, who are a little bit lost, and helping them find a path towards a higher calling. And I think for those individuals, the thing at least that I am finding, and I hope resonates with you guys a little bit, is that the only way towards that path is simplicity. That the more we overcomplicate ourselves, the more things we find ourselves to get lost on, the more things we can beat ourselves up over, the more reasons we have to go back to drinking, to get out of the crowd of people that are trying to push us towards a better life, because it feels like pressure. And, you know, all of these things come from this overcomplication and these expectations we set. And if we can remove ourselves from that a little bit and just focus on trying to be good so that we can be good, we get a little bit more clear on how we can love ourselves. So to everybody who listened, thanks for listening to me ramble. And this was a little bit all over the place. I'm going to try and tighten it in on future episodes, have a little bit more detailed conversations. But for right now, I wanted to give you guys a little background on how I've gotten to where I am as an individual, and hopefully this helped. So thank you very much. I love every single one of you. And yeah, I hope you have a fantastic week. Keep listening.